Welcome to a special conference roundup edition of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. During the 2022 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, doctors from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, spoke with Cancer Network about key findings and multidisciplinary takeaways from their research across different developments in the breast cancer space. First, Dr. Judy C. Bowie, a surgical oncologist of the Division of Breast and Melanoma Surgical Oncology and the Department of Surgery, discussed her research on the impact of breast conservation therapy on local recurrence rates in multiple ipsilateral breast cancer in the Phase 2 Alliance study.
So what kind of outcomes did the breast conversion therapy yield?
So in this prospective clinical trial, we enrolled over 200 women with two or three foci of breast cancer, and then they were treated with breast-conserving surgery, meaning they underwent lumpectomy, preserving the breast, and then they were followed with whole breast radiation therapy, along with a radiation to all of the lumpectomy sites. In this trial, we set our boundary to be that the local recurrence rate could not be any higher than 8% with a five-year follow-up. And so we are reporting the five-year follow-up on the Alliance Z11102 clinical trial, which shows that in these patients that completed breast-conserving therapy, so surgery and radiation therapy, their local recurrence rate at 5 years was 3.1%. And this is an acceptably low local recurrence rate, which is clinically acceptable. And so we think for patients that have multiple ipsilateral breast cancer, they can now consider their treatment options to be either mastectomy or breast conserving therapy.
What do you feel that your colleagues should take away from this research?
So I think the takeaway points from this research really are that both for patients, surgeons, and the multidisciplinary team, if they're seeing a patient that has two or three foci of breast cancer within one breast, that they evaluate that patient with their standard workup and then discuss with the patient not only the option of mastectomy, but also potentially that option of breast-conserving therapy. And if the patient is interested in preserving their breast, one of the interesting findings in this study, which was an unplanned analysis, was that the local recurrence rate was higher in those patients that didn't have a preoperative MRI. So I think for patients that are planning to proceed with breast-conserving therapy for multiple ipsilateral breast cancer, it would be a reasonable consideration to get a preoperative MRI to assess for the extent of disease, and then to offer them the option of proceeding with breast-conserving therapy. And one of the other findings of the trial, obviously, was that for those patients with endocrine therapy-sensitive tumors, so estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer, the adjuvant endocrine therapy was important in terms of minimizing risk of local recurrence, as it is in patients with unifocal breast cancer. And so I think that'd be an important part of the conversation also to ensure that patients are interested in taking endocrine therapy in the adjuvant setting and adhering to it. I think when you look at the patient population that was enrolled in this study, it was limited to women over the age of 40. We didn't have any patients treated with any neoadjuvant therapy. And the vast majority of the patients on this trial had just two foci of disease. Very few patients had a third focus of the disease. So I would say that the group that people are going to feel the most comfortable incorporating this into clinical practice is going to be women over 40 with two sites of disease treated with breast conservation and then whole breast radiation with boost to each lumpectomy site.
Do you have any takeaways from a multidisciplinary perspective?
You know, all of breast cancer care, I think these days, is very much multidisciplinary. And so I think for these patients with multiple ipsilateral breast cancer, it does bring into that patient's care the value of the multidisciplinary team input. Obviously, from a standpoint, if the patient chooses to proceed with breast-conserving therapy, that's going to involve not only surgical resection, but also the incorporation of adjuvant whole breast radiation. So we want to make sure that the patient and the radiation oncologist are comfortable proceeding with the radiation aspects. And then also to incorporate the medical oncologist in terms of the systemic therapy recommendations.
Next, Dr. Robert Mutter, an associate professor of the Department of Radiation Oncology, spoke about his work comparing the use of conventional versus hyperfractionated proton radiotherapy following a mastectomy among patients with breast cancer.
what kind of outcomes did these two different strategies yield?
In both of the treatment arms, there was excellent target coverage and excellent normal tissue sparing, consistent with prior proton therapy studies. But we employed also a newer proton therapy technology called multi-field optimized pencil beam scanning, which also enables skin sparing. And so we can modulate the dose of the skin surface, and we hope that this also potentially reduces the risk of radiation dermatitis or skin burns associated with post-mastectomy radiotherapy, because older proton therapy techniques did not have this ability to reduce the dose at the skin surface. In terms of complication rates between the two arms, we defined complication in our study, which was our primary endpoint, as any grade 3 or greater late adverse event, as well as any unplanned surgical intervention for patients that underwent reconstruction, which was about two-thirds or a little bit more of our patient population. And with a median follow-up of 39 months, we observed 6 complications in the 25 fraction arm and 8 complications in the 15 fraction arm. And there was no statistically significant difference between those two arms. The p-value was 0.2. However, because the upper bound of the 95% confidence interval on the absolute difference between the rates of complications between the two arms was above our pre-specified non-inferiority criteria, we could not definitively claim that 15 fractions was non-inferior to 25 fractions.
What do you feel that your colleagues should take away from this research?
One of the main take-homes is that this study provides even further evidence that proton therapy for breast cancer provides excellent normal tissue sparing, consistent again with prior reports, but also appears to provide similar complication rates and similar disease control, which I didn't mention earlier. There was no difference in disease-free survival between the two arms. Our results again suggest that proton therapy should be a treatment option for patients at centers that have proton therapy available. Our results also suggest that patients being treated with post-mastectomy proton therapy, that the 3-week 15 fraction course may be a reasonable option, provided that decision for the fractionation is a part of shared decision making. And most patients, we really encourage patients that are being treated with proton therapy that they're part of a prospective study or prospective registry. So hopefully we can gain additional information on the optimal dose and fractionation with these efforts in the proton community.
And do you have any takeaways from a multidisciplinary perspective?
Well, I think it's important to recognize, again, as mentioned, that the patients with immediate reconstruction, that they are at risk of complications associated with the reconstruction when they undergo radiotherapy. And so there's a great deal of interest in the field in developing new strategies to try to minimize that risk. As an example, we have a clinical trial through the Alliance, which is being led by my colleague, Dr. Corbin, which is evaluating the use of a thin film that goes over the chest wall, which is, we believe, reduces the risk of radiation skin toxicity. And we think that may help reduce the risk of reconstruction complications, and certainly great interest in developing other strategies to reduce those risks.
Finally, Dr. Siddhartha Yadav, a medical oncologist and assistant professor of medicine and oncology, talked about his work for the population-based carrier study, which explored germline pathogenic variants and other factors as risks for contralateral breast cancer.
Among this analysis findings, which of the data sets did you find to be the most interesting?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we observed was that BRCA1 and 2 were both associated with increased risk of contralateral breast cancer. Now, that's not surprising because that has been shown in multiple studies in the past. I think what's important to point out is that we did not know what was the contralateral breast cancer risk in ATM CHECK2 or PALB2. What our study demonstrates is that CHECK2 mutation carriers are at an approximately twofold increased risk of contralateral breast cancer, whereas ATM carriers, we did not observe that they were at an increased risk of contralateral breast cancer. PALB2 was interesting because what we found that PALB2 carriers were not at an increased risk of contralateral breast cancer in the overall study population or in the ER-positive subset. But PALB2 carriers who were found to have ER-negative breast cancer were at an observed increased risk of contralateral breast cancer, roughly around threefold increased risk. So that was very interesting findings. So I think clarifying this ATM CHECK2 and PALB2 was very important. And these are novel findings from our studies.
What do you feel that your colleagues should take away from the research that you did?
So I think, you know, the key takeaway points today from my presentation today is, you know, BRCA1 and 2 in population-based studies have similar risk as we were aware in the past. So it does not change our management there, number one. Number two is, I think, increasingly, we are observing, not just in our study, but other studies as well, is that ATM carriers may not have an elevated risk of contralateral breast cancer risk. Number three is CHECK2 behaves very differently than ATM, where they may be at an approximately twofold increased risk of contralateral breast cancer. We also looked at race, ethnicity, and so I think Black women who are BRCA1-2 carriers should be managed similar to white women who are BRCA1-2 carriers, because we saw that the risk estimates are fairly similar. And finally, what we found was that is a diagnosis of first breast cancer, ER status of first breast cancer, and the menopausal status of first breast cancer significantly influence your risk of developing second or contralateral breast cancer. And so when discussing risk management strategies for contralateral breast cancer, all of these factors should be incorporated in the clinical decision-making process.
And do you have any takeaways from a more of a multidisciplinary perspective?
So when we think of contralateral breast cancer risk management, I think there are multiple teams that are involved. And, you know, as medical oncologists, we tend to be involved in a lot of these discussions, but a lot of risk management strategies also involve surgical intervention. So our surgical colleagues tend to be involved in those discussions as well. In addition, our colleagues in genetics can also help guide, provide these risk estimates in terms of understanding what the contralateral breast cancer risk is from based on family history, but also based on their several other demographic variables as well. So, you know, when we think of how best to manage the contralateral breast cancer risk in germline mutation carriers, I think input from all of these teams are necessary to better understand the benefits of certain intervention versus the risks, and taking into account all of those factors, a final decision in conjunction with the patient should be made.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.